Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Here's a song called Cure for Pain, and it goes like this.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
Back in 1989, in Cambridge, three musicians came together and formed a band. They called themselves Morphine.
The word morphine comes from the word Morpheus, who's the god of dreams. That appealed to us.
The music was moody and textured. Frontman Mark Sandman called it low rock. They made a sound unlike anything anyone had heard. Here's how famed musician Ben Harper describes it.
Two-string slide bass, Barry sax, and drums. We'll come on a little closer, let me see. Really? Those guys may as well have been playing accordion, banjo, and bagpipes.
Morphine was unique, but the band's intense run came to a sudden, tragic end when Mark Sandman died of a heart attack right on stage on July 3rd, 1999. He was just 46 years old. And tell me where is the faith? His life is the subject of a new documentary called Cure for Pain, The Mark Sandman Story, which is screening through Sunday at the Brattle Theater in Cambridge. Jeff Broadway is a distant family member of Mark Sandman, and that connection led him to create and direct Cure for Pain. He joins us now. Jeff, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me, Meghna. I appreciate it.
We're also joined by the saxophonist of Morphine, Dana Cawley. Dana, it's great to see you. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having us.
Jeff, let me start by asking you, first of all, for you, what was it like to make this movie, to go back and tell this story?
Mark was always sort of a mythological figure in my family, and I only had the chance to meet him once, which occurred when I was 12 years old at my great-grandfather's 100th birthday party. And Mark died a year later in July of 1999. So it was sort of interesting to go back and consider where the emotional derivation of Mark's music came from.
He was one of four children. He had two brothers and a sister. And that early family life really ended up kind of defining him as a person and a musician. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Losing his two brothers, he lost both of his younger brothers within a year and a half of each other, when he was in his, I believe, late 20s. And everyone we spoke to who really knew Mark best, and those weren't necessarily his biological family members, really felt that Mark was a sort of meandering 20-something. And when he lost his two brothers, that really seemed to serve as a source of purpose for him.
Well, we have a clip here from the movie Cure for Pain, and it's where Mark Sandman's mother talks about how his brother Johnny's death really changed Mark's attitude towards his music. So let's listen.
Mark was terribly distraught. After Johnny died, Mark decided he had to make something of himself, and he was going to do something special. He was going to be somebody special, and that became his goal.
So, Dana Cawley, when you first met Mark Sandman, first of all, when was it? And did you kind of immediately get a sense from him that there was something kind of serious going on in this man?
It was obvious, I think, to anybody who happened to see Mark perform that he was had an amazing charisma and built on an enigma that was pretty much impenetrable, even after you got to know him. But what really resonated for me was his soul, I guess. The music that he was making and always seemed to make was very soulful in a time of post-punk, you know, 80s, 85, 86, around that time period. He was a real breath of fresh air into my ears at the time, and I immediately gravitated to him as a musician.
Well, it seems like in many ways you and Billy Conway really filled a void in Mark's life because he had lost two brothers. And in the movie, you tell a really great story about a saxophone that
right.
Mark once offered you. Can you tell us that?
Well, one of the early meetings that we had that was at Mark's apartment in Cambridge, he reached up onto the top shelf and pulled down an old saxophone case and handed it to me and said, "This is my brother Johnny's saxophone. Would you be interested in playing it?" At that point, I didn't even realize he had had a brother. He sort of alluded to the fact that he wasn't with us anymore, but he didn't go into any detail. It was immediately, to me, obvious, the gesture. However, I was far more comfortable playing my own instrument, so I declined. I think I may have tried it out and it may have squeaked a few things out of it, but I said, "Well, I appreciate the offer and certainly the idea behind it, but do you mind if I play my own horn? Because yeah. I feel more comfortable with it." And I think he just sort of wanted to hear it again, maybe, or just see it have some breath in it, you know.
Dana, there are all these great scenes in the movie of you with two saxophones at once. And, of course, Mark Sandman with his two-string bass and Billy Conway on drums. I mean, it's just such an unexpected combination of instruments. When you guys came together to make music, how did you make it happen?
During the time of the early 90s, you were experiencing a pretty strong influx of grunge and garage and really loud guitars and bombastic sounds, and we were playing in that same scene, but the difference was that had the same kind of ethos, but we were using instruments that weren't the standard rock lineup where you have drums, bass, guitar.
Is there a particular early song that you remember when the three of you played it and worked your way through it and you thought, yeah, now we know we're onto something?
I can remember the aha moment in Mark's apartment. It might have been that very same day that he handed me the saxophone, Johnny's saxophone, and just the sound of his one-string bass at the time and my baritone combined in a way that sort of filled in around itself. There was a yin and yang of sound in a way. Put Mark's voice on top of that, and you have a triad where those particular combinations could, you know, you think of a combination lock as three numbers, but you know, infinite possibilities. And that's kind of how we approached it.
Now, I don't ever want to speak ill of the dead, but Jeff, in the movie, you don't really shy away at all from the fact that sometimes Mark Sandman could be kind of difficult to work with. It's expressed here in a clip from the film. This is one of Morphine's producers, Paul Coldry.
Mark was a super talented guy and a really intelligent guy and a lot of fun to be around, but he could be a total b-. And there were a couple of occasions in the span of my working with him where he was such a that I just said, you know what, I got to take a break.
Dana, I mean, it's not unusual for musicians or any creative people to have their difficult moments, but I mean, did you experience that with Mark?
Oh, of course, yeah, yeah. You had to choose your battles. He would say to me, you know, geez, I don't know if I can work with someone who feels that way about me. And I said, well, Mark, you know what, if I didn't love you, I wouldn't say a thing. I wouldn't care, you know, and we could just call it a day, but I do care. I care about you, and that's why I'm willing to confront you if I feel like I've got to say something, you know.
Morphine came together as a three-man band in 1989. Fast forward 10 years and Mark dies really tragically in 1999. Well, Jeff, I guess maybe I should just ask you to tell us what happened in 1999. Brought all of this special creativity to an end.
The guys and Mark had been contacted pretty repeatedly by a few people in a small town about 30 minutes outside of Rome called Palestrina. Morphine had been playing very large shows, most of which were to sold-out crowds, and they just kind of kept getting contacted by this guy Flavio Manieri in Palestrina, Italy. And Mark seemed to really respond to that persistence. And I think he appreciated that persistence and that drive that, you know, this young guy in this small town and the countryside of Italy was demonstrating. And so they went. And that ended up being their last show.
Dana, you were on stage
mm-hmm.
when Mark died. What happened?
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a pretty hot day. It was 100 degrees on the stage, at least. And everyone was moving pretty slowly. We got up on stage and we're going through our set, having a great time. And it was about the seventh song in, doing Super Sex. And I just noticed out of the corner of my eye, Mark is on stage right, and I was on stage left, just sort of buckling at his knees. And the next thing I know, he had fallen over backwards. And you just don't think anything. You just think, well, of course, he's just going to get back up. He's just going to get up. He's maybe fainted. It's hot. I went to him, and I could see him lying on the stage, and his bass was booming, reverberating as it hit the ground, and just trying to call him back, you know, and shouting at him to hang in there. And of course, he died. I assume right there. And they took him away in the ambulance, and we still had hope at that point, but it was clear that soon after that he wasn't going to make it.
Mark was only 46. Yeah. And it turned out to be some massive heart attack?
From what we can tell, I mean, it was clear there was no drugs involved. Mark was not a heavy drug user. That myth needs to be put to rest. He was under a lot of stress. We never know definitively exactly what happened, but from what the doctor, who I've spoken with, it's pretty clear to him that it was a heart attack, a massive heart attack.
In the documentary, you talk about not only was it obviously a loss to Mark's family, but to music. I mean, there was this huge community of people, fellow musicians, fans, people who were just amazed by what Morphine was doing, that, you know, were reeling after Mark Sandman passed away. What was the loss to music itself?
Well, Mark was a cornerstone to the Boston, Cambridge music scene. He was always creating, he was always recording. Anybody that generation who knew Mark was probably had jammed with him. He played with everybody.
We have another clip from the documentary Cure for Pain, and it's from Billy Conway, the drummer for Morphine. Here's his impression of how Mark Sandman's death affected the music community.
What really happened when Mark died was a really close and tight musical community just got tighter. People depended on each other more. They helped each other through what was clearly a hard time for all kinds of people in all kinds of places.
That's a clip from the new documentary, Cure for Pain. Jeff, what has this meant to you to be able to do this? And what do you come away with in terms of a new understanding of the music that Morphine was making, you know, and of Mark Sandman himself?
It's been a really interesting and emotional ride to have started this process in 2009, when we shot our first interview with Bob and Tell Sandman in January of 2009, and to see it come full circle. I'm just so pleased that we've, through making this film, been able to give Mark, I think, the proper tip of the hat that he really deserved.
Well, you know what it's done for me, I think. We talked about his being an enigma. Jeff's film goes a long way in helping to crack open that enigma.
Well, Dana Colley is the saxophone player for Morphine. Dana, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Meghna.
And Jeff Broadway, creator and director of Cure for Pain. Jeff, thank you so much. It was such a great pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you so much, Meghna.
Cure for Pain, the Mark Sandman story, will be screening at the Brattle Theater through Sunday. We will go out now with the title track off of The Night, the last Morphine album, which was released in the year 2000, just after Mark Sandman's passing.
You're the night alive. A little girl lost in the woods. You're a folktale.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com.
Our show is produced by Adam Ragusea, Jessica Alpert, Dan Mozzie, and Amory Sievertson. Our interns are Michelle Woodward and Megan Dooley.
Tim Skog is our technical director.
The executive producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again on Monday. Have a great weekend. See you later.
I can't make it on my own. It's too dark to see the landmarks, and I don't want your good luck charms. carpet of stars.